and Americans for the Arts.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch and row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rains come to.
Well, welcome to the Sustainable Living Program. Your host is John Butts. I'm Sean Canaan. Rob is out today, so we will have some special programming on at 11 as well. But welcome, John Butts, host of Sustainable Living.
Hey, Sean, how you been?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
You're back from vacation.
Yeah.
Great. All refreshed and ready to go.
You got it.
Yeah. It's an interesting time for a newsman, that's for sure.
Always interesting.
Hey, I was going to ask you, you know, it's kind of that tax referendum came up kind of quick on us. And, you know, I was just kind of wondering, you know, like a sales tax for transportation, what kind of maybe, could you summarize that a little bit?
Sure. So the Hillsborough County residents in about 6 weeks filed something like 79,000 petitions to get the sales tax question on the ballot in November. It won't be on August's election ballot. It'll be on November's election, and it will raise the sales. If it's passed, it will raise the sales tax from 7 cents per dollar to 8 cents per dollar in Hillsborough County to pay for transit. Now, there's no major project that it's going for. It's not like there's a light rail line that they've already planned out or something. So a lot of the money will go to HART. A lot of the money will go to the cities, Plant City, Temple Terrace, Tampa, and mostly for road improvements in those cases.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So I'm trying to think. It's not going to go for a stadium.
This will just be for transit, is what they say.
Cool. You know, I just kind of wonder about a sales tax, though. It seems like it's kind of disproportionate hits the people in inner city areas. A lot of people don't drive and everything, but everybody pays that sales tax. But I guess that's the way. That's just the way it. The fairest way to administer it. And but anyhow, I like to start the show by thanking our listeners here to WMNF Community Radio. And Sean, what do you got coming up at 11 and 12?
Yeah, so at 11, we're going to play an alternative radio program with Norman Solomon. So I hope you can tune in for that. Stay tuned at 11 to hear Norman Solomon. At 12 o'clock, I'm going to play audio from a Hillsborough County Commission District 7 race. So if you're planning on voting in the primary, either as a Republican or a Democrat, there are two Republicans running in the District 7 race. Two Republicans and four Democrats. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear from all six of them on the Midpoint program, which starts at 12:06.
Cool. We'll be listening, and then Midpoint comes up, and then, of course, our great Flea.
Yeah.
Flea's
rule. Oh, and he has there was a card that said something about what Flea's show was, but I think Frank has that. We'll read that later on.
Okay. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Monday 10 a.m. Sustainable Living Show, and I'm Farmer John, and I'm the one that's speaking right now, and our engineering program is going to be Sean Command, and Frank Knox is our lineman there. And co-hosting today's program is Tanya Victovic, and Tanya's back. Great to have you today, Tanya.
Thanks for having me again.
Great. On today's show, we're going to focus on sustainable city homegrown food systems. So at first, we'll get an update about this year's Red Tide disaster, and joining us is our University of Florida IFAC grant agent, Libby Carnahan. Great to have you, Libby.
Thank you, John. Thanks for inviting me.
So great to see you. Every year it seems like we have these red tide events. Historically, it keeps getting worse, doesn't it?
It does seem to be a very bad year for the red tide. Red tide is a naturally occurring event. They've been documented in Florida since 1844 officially. It starts anywhere from 10 to 40 miles offshore, and the cysts of the microscopic algae Carinia brevis that lie dormant in the sand, they kind of get awoken by this perfect concoction of biological, physical, and chemical conditions that we don't exactly have pinpointed. But then when the prevailing tides and currents move those red tide organisms onshore, the nutrients that we have from near shore can can kind of help to feed them and exacerbate that bloom.
Cool. And Sean, they had a hands across Florida event over the weekend, right?
Yeah, Hands Along the Water is what they called this one. And there were events all over the state to essentially draw attention to mostly to the red tide and some of the other algae outbreaks that have happened across Florida.
Mm-hmm. So how do humans impact this? I mean, are we the cause, or is it, like you say, is it just a natural thing?
Right. There are a lot of, so often we talk about the group of harmful algal blooms, and unfortunately in Florida we have multiple algae blooms going at the same time right now. So those that are being experienced on the East Coast can be more closely, directly linked to nutrient runoff. The red tide, as I said, is naturally occurring, and how much humans might exacerbate that is still a little bit in question. But really, any nutrients that are there are going to generally feed the red tide bloom, no matter where the nutrients come from, whether they're natural or man-made. And unfortunately, the warmer waters create a more conducive environment for the growth organisms as well. So as we see the Gulf temperatures kind of sustain a warmer temperature for a longer amount of time, the bloom is going to persist.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of hear this blue-green algae mentioned. Is that kind of relevant here in this conversation?
The dinoflagellate, it is a blue-green algae, dinoflagellate. And then, but when it blooms, it does get that reddish color, which gives it the red tide.
Okay. Sean, any questions or something I'm leaving out, Libby?
I guess just a few things I want to let people know. The red tides, when they bloom, then they can bioaccumulate in the different fish and move up the food chain. They can also settle onto the seagrass and the algae that the sea turtles and the manatees do eat. So that's why we're seeing the large numbers right now of fish kills, as well as, unfortunately, manatee and sea turtle deaths. So the numbers as they stand right now from FWC that I got this morning is that we've seen 280 confirmed sea turtle deaths. And 83 manatee deaths. If you see wildlife that you're concerned about that seems distressed, you can call the FWC hotline at 888-404-3922. And if you want to look online and check the beaches in your area, you can check visitbeaches.org. And they have reports up there during red tide. That's a collaboration between Moat Marine Lab and Florida Fish and Wildlife. And so they'll report whether people are having respiratory distress on the beaches, whether there's fish kills on the beaches. And right now, we have been exceptionally lucky in Pinellas County that we haven't seen any of the fish kills or much respiratory issues, but they did detect a few samples last week in South Pinellas that did detect low concentrations. So the USF College of Marine Science modeling is hopefully showing that the prevailing winds are going to keep pushing the bloom south and not allow it to come north, but they just forecast out a few days, so time will tell.
And so the preliminary effects that it has on humans, is it mostly respiratory? Because, I mean, obviously, if you see all these dead animals and, you know, we're an animal, is it safe? I mean, should we be going in the water where there is red tide?
Yeah, so generally, I think probably the best step is just to avoid the water where you know there's red tide. Some people do experience some skin irritation, but as you mentioned, I think the strongest effect that most people see is the respiratory irritation. And so for some people, it might just be a tickle in the throat, but for others with asthma or emphysema, they want to be really conscious that they could end up with more serious situation.
Thank you. And then, when I was looking it up, like usually red tide blooms are usually, you know, they're off the coast a little bit when they come and they only last a few months, but this has been going on since November. Is there any signs that this is stopping or that it's going to end soon?
No, unfortunately with the temperature of the water and the nutrient availability in the water, I think that we're probably expecting it to last until the fall, maybe October, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. And if we can continue this conversation next month or so, unfortunately, if we need to.
Sean, any questions? We're going to go ahead and move on. But
I just want to let people know that you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program here on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, and John Butts is the host.
Okay. And Libby, just, listeners might want to get in touch with you.
Sure. Yeah, they can reach me at email lcarnahan, C-A-R-N-A-H-A-N, at pinellascounty.org, or on the phone at 727-453-6522.
Well, thank you very much, Libby. And we're going to take a little short break right now, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
When a cold world turned to the sunlight and a spring rain settled on down, and all the wild things that grew turned and looked right up at you. When the green grass was warm like a blanket and even the wind made a musical sound, God bless us all after the fall. But here's to the love we found. When all the girls wore soft cotton dresses and all the boys were rugged and brown, and the night was more blue when the whole thing was new, here's to the way we looked at each other. Here's to the plans that turned.
Hey, you're back. This is the WMNF Sustainable Living Show, and I'm John Buss, joined with
Tanya Vidovic.
Great to have you here, Tanya. And for the rest of the program, we're going to be talking about local city-grown food systems and our local nonprofit Bridge Foundation that connects community and ecology is having their summer film series, and it will be featuring the film Edible Cities, and it's produced by Andrew Haas, and it will be on Friday, August 24th at the Unity of Tampa Fellowship Hall, and that's 3302 West Horatio Street. Is that right, Street, Kitty?
Yes.
Okay, in Tampa. And after the film, there will be a community conversation with a panel of guests, and joining us are three of the panelists. First, we have the owner of Circle Pond Tiny Home Community, and that's in the Sun City area, besides, affordable housing, affordable tiny home communities. Debbie's interests are organic edible landscapes, aquaponics, community gardens, and promoting agrotourism. And welcome to WMNF, Debbie Canteen. Debbie, you there?
I'm here. It's Debbie Canine.
Canine. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. It's an honor.
Then I'm sorry. And then we have our local awesome gardener, Kitty Wallace, who runs the Coalition of Community Gardens. She is an educator. She pretty much runs the garden show in the Tampa Bay area. So thank you for coming, Kitty.
Sure. It's an honor to come join everybody talking about food and sustainability with this austere group.
Uh-huh. And also joining us, our next guest worked with USDA under two presidents and was leader of the Detroit Food Security Council, which led its way to urban farming in Detroit. Lou served on the advisory board of the Federal Reserve Bank under President Clinton and helped design the EBT system. He currently serves as the founder and head of Newtown Nation's Farmers Markets, and its program helped provide fresh produce to the underserved community. Welcome to WMNF, Lou Murray. Lou?
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's quite an honor to have you here. Thank you so much. And Lou, why don't we go ahead and start with you? What and where is Newtown Nation Farmers Market?
It's located in Sarasota. It's the underserved area of Sarasota. We believe Sarasota has an underserved area. but yeah, and it's called Newtown. And we created it about 2.5 years ago because we're in a what they call a designated food desert.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. Well, Debbie, could you maybe tell us a little bit about Circle Pond Tiny Community, Tiny Home Community?
Thank you, John. I'd be happy to. It started out as an idea to fill a need for affordable housing. As you mentioned, the community is very near Sun City Center. It's actually in Ruskin. The community of Sun City Center is a 55 and up area where the population began 50 years ago. So the people, 22,000 folks, do need assistance, some of them, with their activities of daily living. And I work in the very middle of that, where among about 400 other employees, and to find young people or entry-level folks who can afford to live nearby has not been that easy. So when you look at the entire picture of housing and food and just basic needs for a human being, when the opportunity came up to purchase this small piece of property, it just somewhat snowballed. And the more that it goes, I'm being blessed with other people with similar ideas who want to be able to live affordably, have a community garden on premises. We are in somewhat of a food desert in that area of Ruskin, not a very walkable area as well. So by having this pocket community where we're able to eat on the land where we are, hopefully one day farm aquaponics in the pond that's in the center of the community, I think not only will we be sustainable, but the goal is to also have an abundance that we can share.
Cool. The living structures, how many square feet are they? Just curious.
The tiny homes can range anywhere up to about 396 square feet. If you were to imagine a fifth wheel trailer, turning that into a tiny home, they're pretty creative. You know, people are able to do what they like with each one. I've seen them as small as 100 square feet.
Cool. Well, you know, that's a real popular topic on the Sustainable Living Show. Very well, you know, there's a lot of people in there with a lot of interest about kind of, you know, reducing the size of our human footprint. But it's so cool to hear what you're doing there. Kitty, how's the Tampa Heights Community Garden?
Right.
How's everything going there?
Well, Tampa Heights Community Garden is about to win the battle with the summer weeds, and that's the annual battle, and we see the light at the end of the tunnel, so we're excited. People are starting to plant their seedlings, buy outrageous new crops that they want to try, purple cauliflower and all such things like that. So we'll have our fall planting day September 15th, and all of the members of our community garden in Tampa Heights will come out and get their garden all set up and make their planting. So we have a little over 100 people in the garden right now. We have three youth groups, and it's just great to be almost at the end of summer. Yes.
I hope.
And you know it well because you're out there at your farm.
Yeah. You know, you can't, right now, this time of year, you know, as wet it is, you can't pick up anything in the grass because you're going to get the ants have gone crazy. And of course, the mosquitoes, you know, about carry you away about every darn thing. Yeah, it's funny. The Bridge Foundation does a lot of great things, and their last film last month was on, you know, children and, you know, getting them outside and everything like that. And you can't really blame them a lot of times. Like, golly, Grandpa, what do you want me to do? You're crazy.
It is hard in the summer in Florida to go outside and face the pterodactyl-like mosquitoes that we have here. So. But we brave it. Yeah, so, and Kitty, your community garden, though, you do a lot more than community gardens. Like, you guys are, like, activists in the area.
Well, right? We've formed a group that's been working with funds from the Aetna Foundation through the American Public Health Association to found community gardens in food deserts in the Tampa area. So we've just completed our 2 years of that project, and we've applied to continue our project. We have, we're on the cusp of three new community gardens starting, and one is starting in Apollo Beach. Debbie, you may know Raleigh Barnes from the Hillsborough County Parks and Rec Department, and he's a key player in the Apollo Beach gardening community. So that's exciting. There's community gardens starting in Wellswood, and the university area is starting a new smaller garden at the north side of the university area. So things are happening.
Yeah, you guys are really creating edible cities everywhere.
We are trying.
And how, if people want to find out more about community gardens, where would they go and find out this information?
Well, our group is called the Coalition of Community Gardens, and the website is www.coalitionofcommunitygardens.weebly.com. And so all the community gardens that are associated with us, there are a few that we haven't snagged in yet because I guess they're just too busy out in the garden having fun with their dirt. But we pretty much have everybody in Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco, and just one garden in Manatee. But it's 27 gardens now, and we can speak with a pretty loud voice when we're, you know, working to improve food situations, food accessibility.
And we're talking with Kitty Wallace, and we're talking about upcoming bridge event where the film is going to be Edible Cities and how to maybe at least it seems like you know, Detroit and Will Allen's up in Milwaukee and a lot of these other places, and really the film is about San Francisco and I think the Oakland and San Francisco area and how these people, you know, like in inner cities, you know, really couldn't get what they wanted, so they created themselves. Lou?
Yeah, in Detroit, we found that we were losing $1 billion a year for food. People were going out of the city to buy food, and it was $1 billion a year. University, Wayne State University came up with that report. And, it, you know, when you got that kind of money leaving your city, and then all the major grocery stores was leaving. All of our major chains were leaving Detroit. And so we was trying to recreate a community-based food system when I was in Detroit. And it started out with that. We couldn't get the mayor to buy into it in the process, you know. And he's in jail now, but anyhow. You know, and it's funny, but I mean, it's funny. But anyhow, we had an issue, and so we organized the Detroit Food Security Council under the Farm Bill that Clinton passed, and we became one of the first one in the country to be a Food Security Council. And what we did, we looked at all of the components. I was in healthcare. We were the first Medicaid HMO in the country. And so we looked at if I'm the number one Medicaid provider in the country, that means that most of my people have food staff and WIC. So our thing was, how can we convert those patients or members of the healthcare organization into a food system? And we looked at it with the governor and with the USDA and with the Federal Reserve Bank, and they thought the program would have worked if we could have converted those 250,000 Medicaid members into a food system, especially in a city like Detroit, where all your grocery stores were leaving. And we were looking at setting up food co-ops. And we had community gardens were part of this scenario, and we was trying to bring in some of the minority farmers from the South, from Alabama and Mississippi, to come in there and to fill the gap. And and I was there when they created the EBT system, and I was on the Federal Reserve Bank when they designed the EBT system to take food stamp from a coupon into a electronic funds.
Mm-hmm, cool. And this that was Lou Murray, and he's going to be one of the panelists. Sean, maybe we could open up the phone lines and give out our email address and maybe the text text number there?
Yeah, we've gotten a couple of emails so far, which we'll get to in just a second. But let me say that this is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 10:31 in the afternoon, and you're listening to Sustainable Living with John Butts. And the number to call in, if you'd like to ask a question, is 813-239-9663. You can also send a text to 813-433-0885, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. I first want to say thank you to the tip jar donation that we got just a few minutes ago from Jim Thorpe in Land O'Lakes. So thank you for that $120 tip jar donation. Thanks for that donation.
Awesome.
And also, I want here's a question from Bill in Rubonia. I'd like to solarize my garden this time of year. Plastic sheeting is expensive. Do you know of a better source than the big box stores for clear plastic poly sheeting? Is this what you use to solarize? And that's the question from Bill.
Well, there's several things you want to think about when you're thinking about solarizing. Some people got in the habit of doing that every year just because. And as we've learned more and more about the life of the soil and the microbes that are there, we really only recommend solarizing if somebody has a really deep problem with
nematodes.
Thank you. Otherwise, you wind up killing everything in the ground below the plastic. It does. If you were going to do it, it would have been good to have done it in June or July. That way you get your whole 12 weeks in before planting in September. So solarizing right now means you're going to be putting that clear plastic on for 12 weeks, and you're going to wind up with a fall crop that's shortened. So I'm thinking, think about it next year, and only think about it if you're worried about nematodes.
Cool. And I think we
have another question, okay, if you'd like me to read that.
Sure.
Yeah, so David writes, here's the question that hopefully will generate some conversation. He says, is it possible for the Coalition of Community Gardens to apply to the state of Florida to grow medical marijuana? I think it would be a great way to make money, but also a nice way to make an important crop in high demand for people in need. And then David signs off saying, in the spirit of John Morgan, I say, smoking and smoking for the reefer.
Well... you know, this whole area is evolving, and all of the information is sort of changing right in front of our eyes. And until the dust settles, I'm not saying anything.
That's probably smart. The conversation does seem to come up every show, though.
Thank you, David, for your question.
Yeah. So, Debbie, you're kind of being quiet there. This panel, any suggestions? Have you kind of, you know, I watched the trailer and I kind of enjoyed it, and I actually paid the $5 to rent the thing, and I didn't quite get through the whole thing because I was busy. But that, I'm sure down there is just like anywhere, you know, like there's just a amazing amount of people with very, very little local food, you know. So, you know, how do you think that this, we can figure this out?
Well, I think the community garden is the answer, you know, and for me, my perspective comes from the senior living industry, where I see, you know, on average 85-year-olds who have really not had good organic food for quite some time, and I see the comorbidities that result from that. So I'm excited to learn more. This is a new industry for me. I'm learning, I think, more than I'm sharing. Hence my reason for being so quiet. I just feel very honored and blessed to be part of the conversation, and I hope that I will be able to contribute as I learn and acquire more assistance from others.
Well, you know, I think that the key word here is community.
Yes.
I mean, we don't do this by ourselves. We can't do it by ourselves.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's what we're really kind of lack here. And, you know, I've always, you know, kind of been pushing at that thing in this individualistic society, but that is the big question.
How exactly. We have neighbors who've lived next door to each other, across the street from each other for 10 years, and then they come to the garden, and then they actually really know each other more than just waving across the street. And we have that report from gardener after gardener in our community garden, and you get so much more spillover. I mean, somebody has a big baby, somebody has a crib. I mean, you know, somebody has an extra sink. It
brings people together.
Right. Yeah. The synergy just happens right in front of your eyes. Sort of like, Debbie, you were explaining about how things just started coming out of the woodwork when you decided to get that piece of land. Stuff
they
just
did.
Happens.
And honestly, the community gardens came from the origination of needing affordable housing, where my goal is to one day step out of a 2,000 square foot home, get into the tiny home myself. I would like to be able to travel, but I hate to leave my garden that I presently have 16 earth boxes, because when I come home, my zucchini's not in great shape. So my goal is to have a community garden on our property. I'll be able to leave and take a trip, come back, and still have zucchini.
Right, yeah. Right. And form a working buddy system with your gardener so that people can share each other's little chores while somebody's on a 2 weeks vacation, and that works
That's
out really
my
well.
That's right. Yeah,
the farmers market also works in that same capacity. When we put the farmers market, our farmers market is in the heart of a food desert. The projects is literally right behind us, and then public housing is right next to us, and then we have a head start on the other side of us. So we're right there in the heart of a food desert, and it was a blighted area. So when we put the farmers market in there, it became a gathering place. It became a place where if you had a product that you wanted to sell, we went from a farmers market, and now we're stressing to be a community marketing place, where you can bring your products and services and stuff into a community that had very few stores and businesses. And so it has not only, it has brought people into Newtown, it also has been, like I say, a gathering place and a place where you can incubate your business as well. And then trying to build relationship with small farmers and local gardens as well.
So is your farmer's market in your community garden in Newtown?
It's in the heart of Newtown, in the heart of a food desert. There is a community garden called Orange Blossom that's down the street from us, although they can't sell and you know, work with us, but we still, you know, kind of work, we're part of the, you know, the same community. But what it has done, it has revitalized, you know, farmers markets basically is there to revitalize a community. When you put a farmers market in to a community, it revitalizes that community, and it also brings people inside the community to buy products and produce and stuff like that. And keep in mind that heretofore, they were buying their produce, they were buying their food from gas stations and liquor mm-hmm. stores, and those hardcore areas, what we call underserved communities, there's literally no grocery stores. I mean, there's liquor stores disguised as grocery stores, and the people were buying, like I said, buying their food out of a gas station or a liquor store. And so, you know, that had to have a negative effect on the health care of that community as well.
Well, you know, I just kind of wanted to chime in real quick. I've been doing this show like for 14 years, and when I first started doing the show, you know, there was a lot of unrest over in St. Pete and the, you know, the lower income places, and mm-hmm. and I always kind of thought about this, and I was, you know, just talking to somebody the other day about it, about how people could actually, you know, that live in housing. You know, you always kind of look at government housing, and there's a little area there mm-hmm. that they can farm, and for those people to be able to say they're, you know, on Social Security or whatever, but then they start selling these $2 and $3 tomatoes. And what kind of income and impact on that? And to get the young people, instead of, you know, they're selling, you know, dope and stuff like that, to sell, you know, organic vegetables, because there's a lot of money in that. And it just seems like it's kind of a no-brainer.
It's kind of, you know, when the rubber meets the road, when you really see the situation. You know, we talk about organic food and hydroponic food, but remember, they was eating out of gas stations and liquor stores. They're not quite there yet. They're not quite mm-hmm. at the organic level. And plus, organic food usually costs more than regular food. So here we are in a low-income area where half of the community is below poverty. Mm-hmm. And to come in directly with organic, they would look at you. First of all, they wouldn't know what organic was, and then it would be cost prohibitive. So we had to first try to see how, if you can't get fruits or vegetables, period, in your community, then you have to show them that you can. And also, you can create your own. The farmers market gives the community an opportunity to create its own food system.
And keep the money right in the community.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly.
You know, you don't holler and scream that that you only got liquor stores in your community. You can create a farmers market. And a farmers market is the easiest way for them to get into the food business. And now all of a sudden, you got a place where you can negotiate with farmers or growers, or have your own garden, and the garden can bring the produce there. Now you're solving your own problem, and you're creating economics in an underserved community where there was no enterprise before.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that was Lou Murray, and he's joining us to talk about edible cities. And of course, Kitty Wallace is here. And on the phone, we have Debbie Kaneen. Is that right, Debbie? Did I get
That's
it right?
Correct.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sean, do we have a phone call?
Yep.
Why don't we hear from Jungle Jay in St. Pete?
Hey, Jay.
Hey. How's everybody doing this morning?
Super.
Great.
We're in the AC right now.
Well, so am I. I'm driving from Beacon Community Garden down to my new incubator down at the Regeneration Station, and I'm excited to hear and meet Lou.
Yes.
Because the vision for our experiment down there, we've already got the business incubator up and running.
Great.
But the vision is to have a space where we can train the local West Lelman neighborhood, which is a little economically depressed and racially diverse and all those things that lend themselves to a food desert.
Yes.
And I am absolutely up for starting a food co-op.
Great.
And farmers market where the neighbors, once they grow in abundance, can market back through our space to the more affluent kind of city.
There you go.
I really want to connect with you, Lou.
Yeah, same here. Same thing. You know, you're what I've been looking for.
Awesome.
Well, you know, Kitty Wallace is the one that connects us all up to date. But you know, we are finding one another. And
yes.
The bubble, I make the analogy of bubbles. You know, I used to talk.
We just lost our caller. So I guess maybe contact the main office if you're out there. Jungle Jim, was that his name?
Jungle Jay.
I like that name, Jungle.
Sorry.
I'm nervous at first.
Our main office is 813-238-8001, and you guys can all hook up after the show. Sorry, we disconnected. Well, first we lost our guest on the phone, who was Debbie, and now she's back. So thanks for joining us back again, Debbie.
Welcome, Debbie. Well, I would like to just mention that the Newport Richey Community Garden Group has two fresh markets they've developed. One is called Tasty Tuesdays, and it's on Tuesdays at the library. And so people who come and go out of the library get an opportunity to purchase organic vegetables. Now, they're not selling them and making a big deal out. It's just that's the way they grow their vegetables. So they're, you know, really good quality veggies. And they have that on Tasty Tuesday, and then on Saturdays they have it at the Restore, Habitat for Humanity Restore, because on Saturdays they tend to have 50% off, so a lot of people come and go out of the Habitat for Humanity's Restore, so they have a small garden. Actually, they have a very nice garden behind the Habitat for Humanity's Restore, and then in the front they have, on Saturdays, the fresh market. So
that's really smart.
Yeah.
That's great.
Go where the people are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The customer.
Yes. The community, yes.
Yeah.
We have a text that came in from the 813 area code, and it mentions the name of one particular company, so I'm not going to mention the company, but it says, I'm surprised by the, and there's an adjective for bad that I can't say on the air, prepared food served at gas stations near my house. For instance, it appears he or she mentions a gas station on Sly Avenue has used the same cooking oil for 5 years or more. That's got to be terrible for your body.
I know that place.
It's just amazing. You know, we I forgot to tell you that we are now a fab market, you know, Fresh Access Bucks. And we're part of that program where if you use your food stamp card at our market, you get 2 for 1, you know.
Oh,
you
yes.
Get
a snap program. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's a great program.
And so when going back to the organic situation, you know, if I'd have first brought the organic food into my market, they'd look at me and say, look, you know, I don't care about the organic thing. I don't even know what it is. It's just too costly. But now we got the fab program, I can now bring organic food in there, and it's basically half price because you pay 50% and they pay the other half. So it's a good way to bring organic food into underserved communities. And also, Whole Foods is one of our partners. They was one of our first partners that came on board. We're what they call, whether they're community organizations, and we're working with them. In our discussion with them, they are interested in bringing organic foods into low-income areas and underserved communities. And so, and I know in Detroit, they have a location in Detroit on Mac and Mount Elliott. And that is the heart of the hood. So they are looking at how do we bring organic foods into underserved communities and make them cost prohibitive, you know, bring the cost down.
You're listening to the Sustainable Living Program hosted by John Butts on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. And we have a caller on the line, Fred in Tampa. Hi, Fred.
I think Farmer John sounds like a faggot.
What the?
All right. Let's hope that Larry in Temple Terrace is a little bit kinder or whatever.
I got a compliment.
How about Larry in Temple Terrace?
Yeah, hi, I'm here, yes. Listen, you were talking about community gardens. I'm having to tune into the show today.
Sure.
Listen, I would like to see you guys start a community garden out in Tenoto Sasso. I have a couple of friends who live out that way who are kind of low income as well.
Yeah.
And I would like to see them have a good community garden out their way, if at all possible.
Okay. Well, just invite me to one of their meetings. You know, I can come and do a presentation. I'm all over the county, you know, this side of the state, actually, doing presentations, and we can see how many people are interested. It kind of starts with the community, because that's what's going to keep it going.
When's your next community meeting, if I may ask?
Well, we actually have a quarterly meetings of all the gardens in the coalition, and that will be October 17th. It will be in Newport Richey. But if you have a local Tenoto Sasso community that gets together, I can come to your meeting whenever it is.
Well, I don't live in Tenoto Sasso, but my friends do.
Yeah, tell them about it. And you can find me on the Coalition of Community Gardens .weebly.com. My information is there, and you can catch up with me there.
Okay, I was just going to say there's a really cool community garden in Plant City.
There absolutely is. Those guys are rocking and rolling out there in Plant City.
And that's pretty close to Tenoto Sasso.
Well, yeah, it's pretty close. But, if it's a community garden, you want it in your neighborhood. Yeah. I know.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Well, Jay is called back. All right, here's Jungle Jay from St. Pete. Welcome to the show. Welcome back.
You there, Jay?
Jungle, you there? I think not.
Yeah, that's my new partner. I might have to leave my number or something, because I think...
I can get you.
Yeah.
We'll get you connected up.
Yeah, I think we can do some great things.
Jay's been involved with the community garden in Clearwater there at the Unitarian Church.
Yeah, he runs Beacon Food for us. He does tours. He's starting up that area where he's going to be bringing in a lot of local resources, almost like the Roosevelt 2.0 down in Ybor, but one step up. So he's a mover and a shaker as well.
Yeah, we're looking for suppliers. I mean, when you say community gardens, it hadn't really taken hold, you know, when University of Florida came and we're talking about community gardens and the Minnesota area, everybody said, oh, yeah, great, great, great. And it's, you guys, we love community garden. And then when it got down to who's going to actually do the gardening, Oh, no, I don't want to do that.
I've been in that meeting before.
Yeah. I thought you were going to do that. Oh, yeah, I'm down with that for Community Garden, but I don't want to go out there with the bugs and the squirrels and the raccoons and the snakes. And it's hot out there.
That's right.
It's August.
It's hard taking that first step out, but once you get out there and embrace the sweat, it's not so bad.
I took a group of high school kids, you know, and I'm a youth minister at my church, and so, you know, we can do this thing, you know. And their thing was, Mr. Lou, this is not cool. You know, you got to be cool. You know, you deal with middle school kids and high school kids. You got to make it cool.
Yes.
You know, because if it ain't cool, man, I, you know, and my peer group would look at me like, are you messing around with those earthworms and dirt? Man, that ain't cool. But we're working with the farm to school program, and we're trying to get a couple of pilot programs off the ground with Booker Middle, which is in Newtown, and that farm to school program. And with Booker Middle, 83% of the kids that's there are on public food programs.
Free and reduced lunch, yeah.
Yeah, which means they're food stamps, which means we are a food stamp SNAP farmers market. So if the school got 83% of the folks, our customers, some kind of way we want to get, you know, start working with them. And we're working on some innovative ideas. Now, they have a farmer's market. They got 10 acres, too, that they want to do something with. And so we're looking at doing some real innovative things down the road with that. And so I'll keep you posted on
that. There's an awesome school in Sarasota, too, that their students grow the food, and then they actually have a little farmer's market that their students grow and sell it, so that the students, that is the cool part about it, is that they are actually able
to
sell it, and then they're making money. So
that's what we did in Detroit. We got the kids interested. They weren't interested in the growing and the squirrels and all that kind of stuff. But what we did, we opened a space at our open-air market in Detroit, which is huge. And we opened up a section for them to bring the products up there. Now, here it is, you know, Ralph, he was, you know, just into this program just to be in it. But when he brought his produce up there and we gave them a space, and I always use this as an example, he put some peppers up on the table, and he turned around to get something else. And when he turned back around, $4 was sitting there. And a light went on, you know.
Yep.
You know, and I could have told him that, but he had to see that.
Yeah.
And once he realized he can grow something that he can only eat with his family, but he also can make money off of it, he was like, "Oh, this is on." You know,
so you're growing your money.
That's
yeah.
right. That's
yeah, they went from the next year. The line to be in the program was all down the street. Because now they understood that I can do a community enterprise with this. And I can take it to the farmer's market. And I can take my investment maybe in the sense, you know, I mean, for the seeds and to grow it. And all of a sudden, if I put $25 or 25 cents, I can make $4.
25 cents, that's right.
And see, going back to what you were saying earlier, I'm competing with the drug man. He's looking for the same talent that I'm looking for, a guy who can innovate and get a market and get a product going. And once you introduce him to that same, you know, that person to where you can make money and you can take the product and you can sell it, it's a whole new ball game.
Yep. Cool. Yeah. Good job.
I think we got a few more phone calls.
Yeah, well, we can get in. Let me first do a quick email. Lisa asks, what's the closest garden in St. Petersburg?
Well, are you South St. Pete, Lisa? I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't get very much.
There's Bartlett Park Community Garden. There's the Eco Village Community Garden. Those are both in central to south. There's the Gulfport Community Garden. There's the Beacon Food Forest. What else? There's quite a few. Look at coalitionofcommunitygardens.weebly.com, and all the community gardens are listed there.
All right, thanks for that question. And we now have a call from Celia in Winter Haven. Hi, Celia.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for taking the call.
Great.
I wanted to tell you guys about something I saw in Ohio. I went to visit family, and they took me to church, of course, on Sunday. And their church has what's called a forage garden. So they made a deal with the city of Columbus, and there's like a little traffic triangle where there's like a median strip, and there's a bus stop there, so people stop and they sit in the bench to get on the bus. And so, but the city wasn't using the ground in that little triangular area, and the church put in some apple trees and some, I don't know, rhubarb and tomatoes and stuff like that. And it's actually a forage garden for people who are waiting for the bus. They want to have an apple, they can have an apple.
Oh, that's an awesome idea.
Wow, I like that.
Great idea.
Yes.
I don't know for a fact that that would work down here in Florida because different climate, but I thought it was such a cool idea that the church would put food out for folks.
There's a few of them in the area. Jungle Jay, who called earlier, has one in his community church, and then also the city of Tampa actually has seven that I helped kind of start and plant. So there's actually hundreds of fruit trees on public property in the city of Tampa that is open to the public, and there's one at Lowry Park, there's one around Lab Park. They're not everywhere, but they're spread out. But there is community fruit trees that are that are established.
We're looking at doing that in Newtown too. Newtown used to be like the Garden of Eden at one time back in the 40s and 50s, but for some reason fruit trees died, and so the city came one weekend and had fruit trees at our market, and I mean that was one of our biggest amount of people that came to our market. And so now the city is looking at working with us to come back in there and looking at making Newtown back to where it used to be, where fruit trees were everywhere. And so they are interested in working with us to bring that about.
That's a great idea.
Bring fruit trees back there.
The city of Temple Terrace actually offers a cool program where they, you know, you can get a free tree from the city. Well, one of the options is a fruit tree. So, I mean, it would be great if all the local cities who do offer free trees provided a fruit tree so that you can get the fruit trees in the communities.
Or if the churches could plant them.
And the churches could plant them, yes.
That's a good idea.
Not just churches, but, I mean, churches often have land and they could use a tree, an avocado or something like that.
Oh, I love it.
There's a couple of community gardens that I want to give a little shout out to. The Mustard Seed Community Garden at the Timms Memorial Presbyterian Church in Lutz. They were actually the winner of the Harvest Award this year from Hillsborough County Fairs. They have a whole section of their garden that they use for a food bank, but they also have gardeners that garden from themselves. And the Seeds of Faith Community Garden in Brandon, half of their 50 garden plots go to the ECHO nonprofit organization that distributes foods to food bank. ECHO was named Nonprofit Association of the Year last year.
You know, I'm so excited because my church, I'm a deacon at my church. We own more property in Newtown than anybody. We own 12 lots in Newtown and 6 properties on MLK, which is the enterprise section. And so you just gave me some food of thought. You know, the city wants to give us fruit trees, and our church got the land.
Yes.
And the land is just sitting there. You know, for investment reason. But anyhow, we can get the city, because our church got the land, and the city wants to work with us. So when I get back, you may be reading about this.
Yes. Listen, you just let a light bulb off on my friend over here. So thanks
that's
for
right.
calling.
The Garden of Eden. That's biblical.
Yes.
I love it.
And that's Lou Murray's voice, and he's with the New Nation. How can people get in touch with you, Lou?
It's area code 941-524-7618.
Mm-hmm. And we might as well do this while we're there. Kitty, how can people kind of get in touch with you?
People can get in touch with me via email, KITTWAL. Those are short versions of my name, Kitwall at AOL.com.
Okay, and Debbie down there around Sun City. How can people find out more about
that? Well, okay, for Circle Pond, they would just email me at info@circlepondtinycommunity.com.
I just want to mention again the bridge event. It's going to take place not this Friday, but next Friday, August 24th, Friday. And it's at the Unity Tampa Fellowship, and that's 3302 West Horatio Street in Tampa. And it's the Bridge Foundation in Tampa. Bridge tampa.org is how you can find out more information about the Bridge Foundation and their work in sustainability. This is the WMNF show, and Sean's been in here with me and trying to get through that.
And this is the Sustainable Living Program hosted by John Butts, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned after the NPR headlines. We're going to hear a program from Alternative Radio by Norman Solomon. And later on today, you can enjoy a Beach Boys sandwich, new music from Elvis Costello and Alejandro Escovedo, and hear George Benson with a gorilla. That's all coming up on It's the Music today from 2 to 4 or anytime online at WMNF.org. This has been the Sustainable Living Program hosted by John Butts. Stay tuned now for NPR headlines, followed by Alternative Radio with Norman Solomon.
Ain't nowhere else to go. You weren't supposed to see me cry. I didn't come prepared for such a sad goodbye. I was thinking maybe we could start again. Now I know that that ain't how story ends, so I'll just turn and go if you insist.